Le orange, orangerie, orangerie. Wait, say it again. Orangerie.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
In the Tuileries Gardens, next to the Place de la Concorde in Paris, lies a gem of a museum. The Musée Orangerie holds an Impressionist and Post-Impressionist works, most famously Monet's water lilies. Your solo travel advisor, Astrid Clements, suggests you include this museum on your list of sights to see for your next Paris solo travel adventure. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Let's travel to Paris and learn more about this culturally rich destination. Astrid, you recently had the chance to visit Musée Orangerie. What makes this museum so special?
Well, Catherine, I think everything about this petite museum is special. From, first of all, its beautiful architecture, which was a Napoleon III building that originally was an orangerie, which an orangerie is like a hothouse for citrus plants. Mm. And this was for the royal families, all of their oranges and lemons and grapefruits and everything. So this was actually an orangerie. And these buildings, too, a long time ago, they were used for social events and parties, etc. It wasn't just a utilitarian thing. So this was the original purpose of the building. And then it was kind of, you know, went through different phases of history, and it kind of got real ratty in there. Well, in 1920, the French government redid the building specifically to house Claude Monet's water lilies. So it had a new lease on life. And then more recently, between 2000 and 2006, there was a $36 million renovation that really brought it up to very high modern standards in terms of lighting, artificial lighting, as well as natural lighting, and making it a real wonderful facility for art exhibits, as well as poetry readings, children's classes. It's really a very integrative museum now. It's not too big. So this is one of the things that makes it so special. You know, the Louvre is fabulous. You know, the Musée d'Orsay. I mean, Paris has 135 museums. I mean, this is a place of museums. But this one is just a little jewel because it's just the right size. You know, about 3 hours is really all you need there, but it's just a delightful place. So that's the first thing that makes it very special. Then secondly, the two permanent collections, which is the reason why they have spent so much money to keep the structure and to, you know, make it a museum. The first one is the famous Claude Monet water lilies exhibit. And it is stunning. Water lilies presentation is called the Nymphes or the Nymphas. And it's a cycle of 8 huge oil painting murals that were basically inspired by Claude Monet's pond and Japanese gardens at his beautiful estate in Normandy. And I must share with you, I had the opportunity about 18 years ago to spend an afternoon at Claude Monet's home in Giverny, and I will never forget it. It was another magic moment that I had. I was so taken aback by his colorful mansion inside. It was very kind of plain, but, you know, two-story, you know, on the big side, not huge. But once you went inside, the vibrancy of the colors that he used, the palettes, and just the warmth of the the interiors. You could feel his life. And in learning about how disciplined he was, about how many hours a day he painted, and he had to have his lunch at a certain time every day, and it only could go at a certain amount. I mean, he was extremely disciplined with his whole life and how he created his gardens and all of the thought behind what he was doing. It was such a memorable experience, as well as the gardens themselves. He had dahlia after dahlia gardens. He loved dahlias. I had never seen a dahlia, or if I had, I didn't know it was a dahlia. But after going to Giverny, I fell in love with the dahlia, and his dahlias are just to die for. So that was extra special too. And then you go across or underneath a passageway under the street, and this fabulous pond, and the bridge, and the Japanese bridge, and everything about the willow trees. It all kind of comes to you, because I had taken an art history course when I was in college, and of course you studied Monet and Impressionist, and I it was jarring my memory, but there's nothing like being there in person. So, and I'd seen other of his paintings in various museums that were, you know, of various scenes in the pond and the water lilies, but to be there, It was really special. So I share this with you. If you have the opportunity, and you can take day tours from Paris if you're there, to go to his home and his gardens, do it. It's really something special to do. Back to the museum. In this particular work, this water lilies, nymphae, heroic work, it took him 30 years to complete this work. I mean, he was really obsessed with it. This was basically like Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel. I mean, he took the different looks of this pond and this Japanese style kind of lagoon and painted it during different times and different seasons. So these 8 murals, which are housed in the Musée de l'Orangerie, you have a green reflection, you've got the water lilies reflection, you have the tree reflection, the morning clouds reflection, the morning with willows reflection, 2 willows reflection, and then the setting sun. So he takes the same location and varies all of, you know, what he's depicting. And they're huge, first of all, and how he seamlessly paints and goes into a different color scheme and tone and mood. I mean, it is something to see, just because of the heroism of this work. And you can feel his passion in this when you go see it. So, and these murals they're displayed in 2 different rooms, and these rooms are kind of like a long oval. So, you know, because each mural is so long, it gives it enough space to really take your time and do a panorama. And of course, it has a nice little benches in the middle. And it's on like a white stucco and has natural light that comes in from the top, but also it's lighted with the art lights, and beautifully framed with a small gold frame. So it's very simple in the room, and just those 8 paintings, 4 in each room. It is stunningly elegant. And his idea was, well, first of all, he wanted to donate this one-of-a-kind creative endeavor to the French government or the French state. And he did it the day after Armistice on November the 11th in 1918 as a symbol for peace. After World War I, it was horrible. And his idea for housing it here in the Musée de la Orangerie was he wanted this to stimulate or to be a haven for peaceful meditation. And it was his gift to modern man with modern man's overworked nerves. Basically, he wanted this to be a calm space after World War I. And I think it really is a calm space. It's something like a spiritual sanctum dedicated to this particular piece of art. It's really is special. So that's the first and foremost that makes this museum so special. Secondly, another permanent collection in this museum is the Jean Walker, dear Lord.
Guillaume.
Okay, please help me with my French pronunciation. This is one of Europe's finest private art collections that now has been donated to France. But it has 146 works that it spans the period of the years from the 1860s to the 1930s. So it's Impressionism, post-Impressionism to the modern art period, and also a strong emphasis on African art, which was so avant-garde. So it's this Jean Walker, Paul Guillaume, did I say it right?
Guillaume
collection is outstanding. And most of the pieces in this collection were collected by Monsieur Guillaume. He is basically, anybody who knows anything about history, art history, and especially French art history, and during this time, knows that he is really touted as one of the greatest art dealers, definitely of his time, and maybe of all the Parisian art dealers through the years. But he was the man to go to during the Parisian avant-garde era of the early 20th century. You know, he collected and sponsored and really supported Picasso, Matisse, Modigliani. I need to go to school for all these names.
This episode is going to challenge us with our...
yeah, well, these names. But he was really the man behind the artist in helping, collectors and the public in general understand the importance of art and the creative process. He founded the Les Arts à Paris, where he promoted a lot of the important artists and upcoming artists of the era. He would write articles, and he really was one, I think he was the first person to do individual art exhibitions. You could go view art in the museums or in people's personal collections, but he actually did exhibitions, and he was a promoter too, but he was a promoter in a way that really was, he wasn't just promoting to sell. Of course he wanted to sell, but still he helped these artists really become professional, well-known, being able to support themselves, which, fostered these wonderful art movements. And so he was the man. Shows you how aesthetically, well, avant-garde, but also aesthetically wise about. Maybe I'm not getting the right word to express, but he was one of the very first people to focus on African art and collect it and promote it. Unfortunately, Monsieur Guillaume died when he was 42. His wife, beloved wife, Dominica, was, her nickname, her real name is Juliette Lacaze, but she inherited his estate. She ended up marrying a architect, Jean Walter, And she continued to collect artwork, sell some of the ones. And then when she died, she bequeathed this art collection to the French state, which was actually his will. This was in his will. She could have the collection, but upon her death, it needed to go to the French state, which I think is wonderful. But in this collection, you have 25 Renoirs. And when I tell you they are the most beautiful Renoirs, they are some of the best he ever did. It's just gorgeous and so French. When I think of France, I do think of Impressionism. And oh, these are just to die for. 15 Cezannes, one Gauguin, one Monet, and one Sisley. Those are the Impressionist works that you'll see. Then you've got 12 Picassos, 10 Matisse, 5 Modigliani, 5 Marie Lucenci, 9 Rousseaus, 29 Durains, 10 Utilio, and 22 Soutain. And the early modern works were his, but the last artist that I shared, that's really her influence. But they're all quite prominent in their expertise, and they're part of how art has evolved, especially in France. These two collections are extraordinary. The water lilies and then this Walter Guillaume collection. I mean, this makes this museum just totally outstanding. And the thing about it is, the museum is small, so it's not overwhelming like some of the other museums that you go to. So you have enough time to key in and to really look. And what a lot of times what I do is if I like a painting, I'll take a picture of it, take a picture of the artist, the name of the painting. And then when I go home and I look through my pictures or I want to kind of remember some of the things I didn't write down, then I have the name and everything so I can go and read a little bit more about it. So basically, this museum is so special because of these two special or extra special permanent collections.
Speaking of the permanent collections, I noticed that this museum was not only home to a permanent collection, but they hosted tons of exhibitions and special events. I noticed that there was a screening of documentaries. It seems like a very more than a museum kind of museum.
Definitely. I would say that the museum is somewhere that is definitely cutting edge. It's a place where music, poetry, reading, other thought-provoking creative activities are done. Children's art classes go on there. A lot of the museums are going in this direction, but this museum was from the get-go created to do that. In one of the themes that came through this early concept for this particular museum was it wanted to make modern man really think about life's key issues. Whether it was racism or multiculturalism, and how the individual interprets and finds meaning and thrives in his life, especially in the modern world. And how, you can incorporate value of the past and still incorporate all this change in modern life. So this museum was created for people to think about this and to be able to embrace change but value the past. To use art also as focusing or stimulating this kind of discourse in reflective thinking. So even that to me has such a special quality. It's not just about certain collections that are contemporary or traveling exhibits or permanent exhibits. It's more than that. It's a lot more of the interface with the with the common man. And that's really what Monet wanted to do. He wanted it to be a place where you have peaceful contemplation to right yourself or, you know, get yourself in the zone again. So from the very get-go, it was more than a museum. To further answer your question, one of the unexpected but very delightful surprises, which goes along with this thought of making people think larger or outside of the box or reflective or introducing them to new and various types of sights and sounds and creativity. Well, when I was there in November, the temporary exhibition was exhibition called Dada Africa, Non-Western Sources and Influences. Now, this completely blew me away. First of all, I have never seen any Dada African art anywhere in any museum in all of my travels all over the world. And I typically go to some of the major art museums because I like the visual arts. I'm not creative. I can't even draw a decent stick figure. I have the worst handwriting in the world, but I love to go and just look at these things and think, how can a person's mind have perceived that and then put it on a flat piece of canvas? That just completely is a mystery to me. I saw the exhibit. I said, yeah, I'm going to take the time to go through it. It blew me away. It was so interesting. First of all, I learned that this particular Dada African art movement started actually in Zurich, Switzerland, as a subversive art movement during World War I. Now, really, I mean, that in itself is kind of a weird juxtaposition. But from there, it caught on in Berlin, in Paris, and New York. And, it was one of the first types of visual arts that used all different types of creative medium, whether it was sound poems, collages, posters, oil paintings, dance, textiles, wood reliefs, even dolls and puppets. So it was basically a rejection of traditional social values, which were thought to have led to the catastrophic events of World War II. So this African art and this Dada exhibition specifically was showing how they were using African art to challenge these old ways of European thinking that led to this catastrophic war. And that there's more to the soul in experiencing life. And there are lots of different cultures that deal with stress, frustration, power, life, money, in different ways, and it comes out in their art. So they were showing this, and it really became, very avant-garde for sure, but cool. So let me kind of bring you back to a little bit of my research into this, because to tell you the truth, when I saw it first, I didn't understand all of it. I began to grasp it as I moved through the exhibition, but I didn't get all this. I did a little research before the show to make sure that I wasn't saying anything that was, not correct. But, against the backdrop and alternative systems of thought and creativity came under fresh scrutiny, promoting many avant-garde artists to study and embrace art forms of other cultures. So really, this particular movement started a lot of just a new freedom of thought and form and everything that pushed it way further than Picasso or Miro or, you know, Etra or whoever. I mean, this was really way out there on the cultural spectrum. So this particular exhibition, it's definitely a multidisciplinary showcasing of non-Western works from Africa, American Indians, and Oceanic or Asian origins, you know, alongside of some of the more traditional Dada works. But, you know, what struck me so hard is it showcased how Paris was very receptive for the non-European art or the very avant-garde. Now, when I think of Paris and I think of Parisians and the French to a certain extent, they live and breathe France in Paris. And anything that's not that is like, you know, it's not up to snuff. So for them to be so avant-garde or accepting of a very foreign culture and creative expression shows you how Parisians and the French in general can really, when they are into the creative arts, can really grasp where that real creative fire and quality is. And that's exactly what they did. And Paul Guillaume, who this permanent collection in the Musée de l'Orangerie, that's, you know, he was the first to do this. And he was a Parisian. Now, that said, to me, that screams a lot personally. But in this exhibition, you have Hannah Hoch, Jean Arp, Sophie Taubin Arp, Hugo Ball, Man Ray, and Picabia. Those names, except for Man Ray, really don't mean anything to me. I had never heard of them. But when you go through this and you see the posters and you see all of the different oils and the combination of African or Asian kind of forms and colors and everything, and then it's couched in a modern kind of cubist work. It was fascinating, the blending of it and how it was going on. Now, I don't know how much purpose, you know, how much interaction that caused that, but even so, it was being accepted, this new kind of vibe and thought and creativity from a whole different culture, like completely different than European, was being noticed and valued. So that's, you know, I think that was definitely revolutionary, and especially at this time in Paris. So to have this in this museum screams to me how special the museum is. And they have changing temporary art exhibitions that are probably equally good in whatever the focus is. So that in itself, this Dada African temporary exhibit that I went through, I mean, it just blew my mind, to tell you the truth, because I had never seen anything like that. And then for it to be housed and promoted in this museum and in France by this particular collector, I was really enriched from the whole experience for this 3 hours at this wonderful museum. So I think that this place is kind of like a hotbed for what's really good dealing with multiculturalism and in the art world, and valuing change and still rooting it in what is really good.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like there's a little bit of we have our roots in the traditional, and we have all this sort of challenging and new, and it seems like they've kind of put their feet in both camps in a little way. that make sense?
Oh, yeah, they have, and they've done it wonderfully. It's a very comfortable museum to be in. You know, the rooms aren't cadaverous, you know, like they're huge with these huge artworks. No, it's not like that. And you can get up close to all the works of art. And I went in November, so there weren't a whole lot of people. But I'm going to tell you when we get into the tips. I know you wanted me to give some tips, Catherine, a little bit about how crowd control goes on now in Paris.
Well, we know that our listeners love tips. We love our tips from you, Astrid. So let's just go right to that right now. What tips do you have for the solo traveler to enjoy a museum like Musée Orangerie? Orangerie.
Okay. Well, these are my personal tips and some helpful information that, you know, I think they'll help you when you visit this jewel of a museum for sure. First of all, arrive early. Arrive when it opens or go the last 3 hours of the day. And the hours are from 9 until 6. It's open daily, except it's closed on Tuesday. And, you know, you might want to also check if you go in the off season, because in France, all the museums, you never know when they're really open. I mean, this happens, especially in the winter. So, but arrive earlier or late so you don't have, or you can avoid as many people as possible. You need to allocate at least 3 hours. If you want to see the whole museum, both the permanent collections and temporary one, as well as get a cup of coffee in the cafe. And they have a really good museum shop with coffee table books, as well as reference books, gifts, souvenirs. I mean, I know the day I went, it started raining, so I had to buy an umbrella. And I bought the most beautiful Monet umbrella. And it was not that expensive, but it's sassy. That's all I can say. So it was one of those functional souvenirs. But so about 3 hours you should allot. Then make sure that you get your concierge to buy the tickets for you before you go to the museum. A lot of the museums, like some of the smaller ones, they'll even target a time when your ticket is available. But get him to do the ticket and have buy a no-line ticket. So that means if you get there, you don't have to wait in the lines. And unfortunately in Paris, the museum lines are horrible. So do that. That makes a lot of difference. And what I was going to tell you before we got to the tips is now for all of the major Parisian museums, they have what's called the VG Pirate Program, which this is security controls now are at the entrance of museums and monuments that allow only a certain amount of people to view what's inside. So that makes it slower in those lines. I mean, and they are really clamping down on that because they're trying to help you not have that horrible tourist experience where there's so many people in one room, you can't even breathe, much less see what you came to see, and everybody's elbowing each other. And it's just not, you know, you just want to leave, and it you don't get out of it what you want to. But if you have a no-line ticket, this is never a problem. You go straight in. On the first Sunday of every month, it's free. So if you happen to be in Paris on that Sunday and you want to go, no charge. And I don't know if I told you, the tickets I think are about $11.50. You know,
that's reasonable.
Yeah. Oh no, it's very reasonable. Best time to visit is in the off season, late fall, winter, early spring. And then also, they have the option of self-guided tours or with the audios, cassette set, or actually being in a guided tour. And, you know, you can get your concierge to research which tours, the guided tours, are available if you want to do that. The self-audio tours come in 8 languages, I think: French, English, Spanish, Russian, Portuguese, Italian, Japanese, and Chinese. So most all major languages, and in Arabic too, are covered. Some of the guided tours are, you know, you can take a several-hour tour, development in painting from the late 19th century to 1830s. That should just be wonderful, going through all of those different works of art. I mean, to really get the background on them, I would think that that would be very enjoyable to do. Monet to Picasso, A Story of Painting, then The Footprints of Matisse. You know, just really, I would probably say 2 hours of really wonderful information that helps you appreciate exactly what you're seeing and not just listen to the audio thing, and then not being in a huge group. So that's available. Then you really, another tip is, you don't have to be an art lover or an art connoisseur to enjoy this museum. Like I've shared several times on the podcast, it's small, but it's extremely high quality. And because you can get close up to the works, it's very comfortable in this museum. So, you know, just go with an open mind and just experience it, because you come out and probably with the same impression I did, is that was really something special. That was really nice. Then also, you can take photos. They don't have any problem with photo taking. And I like to do this. I take probably way too many photos, but if I like something and I want to remember it, I just snap a photo with my phone. That's why I have 53,000 photos on my phone, but here nor there. And then what I also do is I'll always make sure I take a picture of the little placard, which gives the name of the work, the artist, the period it was done, so I can go back and actually research it properly quickly. I don't have to scroll through everything. But I really, you know, you can take some good photographs there. And that, I think that's quite nice. You can probably make some nice collage videos.
When you were mentioning that earlier about taking pictures, I thought, I had a little tickle in my mind, like, really? They let you take pictures? Because some museums are, that will be, get you booted out of there right away.
Oh, no. In fact, I took several videos of the Monet's, the oval elliptical, the 4 panels on both rooms. Yeah, so I've captured the whole work in some videos. And it's you usually can't do that in museums, right? Like you said. Yeah. So, you know,
extra cool.
It is. It's really nice. And this is the point of this museum. They want you to experience this art, and they want you to benefit from taking the time and to appreciate it. It comes across, I think. And then if you like art books, they've got great coffee table books there and reference books, you know, so, you know, you'll want to allot some time to just dig into this gift shop, because they have all kinds of gifts, you know, whether it's for reference or children or souvenirs or, you know, memories from going to the museum or particular artists that just touched you from what they worked. So it's a great little museum store. And then last, if you want to get the most out of your visit to the Museum de la Lingerie, you really should do a little research before you go. You know, I wish I would have known more specifically about this particular Water Lilies presentation. I definitely wanted to know more about the Walter Guillaume collection, because those Renoirs just blew me away. The whole collection was stellar. If I would have known a little bit more, I would have enjoyed it even more, which would have probably been pretty hard to do, because it was so amazing. I mean, I was so, I just thought, golly, this is so classy. I mean, this is really fine. On your next trip to Paris, if you have to choose from the 153 museums to go to, really consider the Musée de l'Orangerie. It is so special. And I think you will have a peaceful, uplifting, and definitely an enriching experience there. And it will be a memorable travel event. I know it was for me. So that's it for this podcast. As usual, we love all of our listeners. I appreciate anybody who subscribes. If you're interested in more of my thoughts about affordable luxury ideas, products and services for solo travelers, go to my website, Astrid Solo Travel Advisor. Just Google me, astridtravel.com. And, as I said, if you are in Paris and you want to go to a museum, try the Musée de l'Orangerie. You'll love it.
We trust, listeners, that your part of your pre-trip research is this very podcast. So I'm sure you've turned some people on to going to this museum, Astrid, just by this through this show. And when you pack for this amazing trip, if you want to make your travels just a little less stressful, why don't you use a packing list? Astrid has a packing list for you. Complimentary. Just go to her website, astridtravel.com, right there on the homepage. Just give your email address and you'll receive the complimentary packing list to be downloaded right away. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, any finer place that podcasts can be found. We love our subscribers. Thank you for subscribing. It helps other solo travelers find this information. Astrid, we survived all the names through the show. Oh. We survived. I'm going to go back to my French 101. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Au revoir. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.